D. Hunt.
Justice Miller Lerman again is recused from this matter. Judge Pirtle will continue to sit with us. Mr. Davis, good morning to you.
Just have to give me a moment. This rotation of judges is making me busy. I have to be in this rebuttal. Mr. Chief Justice, members of the Supreme Court, my name is James Martin Davis. I'm appearing on behalf of Rashad Hunt, who is the defendant in this case. My appellate client was 15 years old at the time he committed these offenses. He was convicted of assault. He was given a sentence of 15 to 20 years. He was convicted of robbery, given a sentence of 15 to 20 years. Finally, he was convicted of use of a firearm and sentenced to 5 to 20 years. Basically, he received a sentence of 35 to 60 years. So what we're saying is really twofold with respect to this case, that first of all, that the trial court erred by failing to transfer the proceeding to a separate juvenile court when the state, in effect, failed to satisfy their burden of proof of providing a sound basis for retaining a juvenile court case in the district court. And the second is that the trial court erred by refusing to sentence the defendant under the Nebraska Juvenile Court, and more importantly, imposed an excessive sentence by failing to consider the juvenile's age, his mentality, his education, his experience, and his social and cultural background. Those are the arguments. With respect to argument number one, what we're saying there is that the prosecutor failed to meet the burden of proof, but despite that failure, the court kept the case in district court. I think that we can sum it up by the words of the prosecutor in their final argument when they said, so it's the state's position that based on the charges alone that the case needs to stay in adult court. And I think that's the...
What did the judge actually say?
Well, the judge was saying that based on, in effect, that based on the violence involved, and the fact, and the nature of the charges, that he didn't say necessarily it overruled these other factors. He just said that was the primary, those were the primary factors that caused him to...
Were there earlier juvenile proceedings involving your client? Did the judge note those?
He did. Mm-hmm. That certainly was noted, and that's part of the things that you consider when you're doing that balancing.
Wasn't your client on probation when this offense occurred?
He was.
He cut off the monitoring device to ensure that he could be at home and be tracked?
He did that. I mean, this kid was 15 years old. He was the product of a single mother. I don't know how many other kids there were. He was taken away from her because of her drug use and her inability to provide. So what I'm saying in this instance with respect to argument number one, that this case should have been, but wasn't transferred to juvenile court. And I have to be honest with you, in the record, I do this all the time. I would have handled this much differently. The record is scant in terms of, I think it's still there. I think you can still remand this and have another hearing. So you can consider these factors. So you can consider the sex. Excuse me, you can consider the age and the mentality and the education. Because what you do in these cases, I mean, you could... There was no neuropsychologist, there wasn't anybody testifying about his education or his social, cultural background. All those things are important. And I think if it goes back, we can bring in evidence of those things. I think that the record is scanty, and like I say, I have to be honest with you, I would not have done it this way. I get these cases transferred every so on. It's rare, but you do it by putting on expert testimony and putting on parents and families and educators. That's how you get it done. You just can't slap an argument or two together and expect the judge to continue it. I think with respect to the second argument, I'll submit it in terms of that first argument, but the second argument is that the sentence was...
Before you go on to that, we review the request to transfer decision for abuse of discretion?
That's right.
All right. Now,
that's certainly the standard.
All right.
But the second one, with respect to the sentence being excessive, bottom number on this case is 35 years. This kid is 15 years old. I mean, most of my cognac's older than that. And we have to recognize not just two-dimensionally, we have to think about it in real terms. This is a child. He's a kid. You know, he's a kid that didn't have chance. They say, I don't know that he was. It says in the record he was a member of the night gang. I'm unaware of that gang at all. But, I mean, even if he was, look at a kid like that. I mean, he grows up. They practice being hard, and they don't think they're going to live past 30. And their only role model is another when they're 12 or 15 or 16 year old. You know, that the solution to that's not lock them away for 35 to 60 years. You know,
what is the 35-year bottom line actually transfer into?
It's 17 and a half with good time, but there's no guarantee of an early parole. That's a parole eligibility date. His jam date or mandatory release date, you know, is 30 years for a 15-year-old. Now, this isn't a homicide case like you were talking about earlier. This is a 15-year-old kid who was waving a gun around and tried to commit a robbery.
Well, he did more than wave the gun around.
Yes, he did. He, there's no question. I'm not going to deny the seriousness of his action. But that's what the juvenile court's for. I mean, just because there's nowhere in the code that says because there was a gun involved or because we talk about protection of society. There's no question about that. But there's nowhere in the code that says that outweighs all the other factors. You have to consider too. The whole juvenile court system starts out with what's in the best interest of the child. That's why we have juvenile courts. That has to weigh an effect. Again, like I said, I would handle this a little bit differently. But Chief Justice Heavigan's familiar with 18 U.S.C. 3563. That's a federal statute. And basically it says, a judge shall impose a sentence that's sufficient, but not greater than necessary to impose it. Now, that's not our law. That's federal law. But it's the same kind of thing that we need to consider in this case, is that in imposing a sentence, the judge considered his age. Okay? I don't know that he considered the other fact that he was told, his mentality. That needed to be addressed. You know, what's the mental state of this kid? Why did he do it? His education, that didn't even come up. You know, his experience.
Were all of those matters considered in the pre-sentence investigation report?
Scantily, I guess. I mean, they mentioned it, but I mean, I don't know that there wasn't any evidence adduced at the trial. And I think the judge has a duty to seek out the evidence, to find out what's the social and cultural background of this kid. What I think you can do, and you've got it, is to send it back suggesting that he get a 5 to 20, a 5 to 20, and a 5 to 20. That's 15 to 60 years. That's the just result that we talk about, you know, in terms of an appeal and the standard of appeal here. But, you know, I mean, that makes more sense, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, he's still going to be under the thumb of the criminal justice system for 30 years. But he's going to be able to get out. If he sins, if he commits any violation, he's going to be back behind the wall. All these excessive sentences mean we've got 158% of prisoner overcrowding. I get a call from a client last year who's a DME. He's sleeping in a cot in the hall. Now that kind of thing can be cured with respect to somebody like this when you give them a chance to get out. They're still prisoners. The difference between a probation violation and a parole violation means you don't get out on bond, you go right back in. And so that's what I'm suggesting, is we set it back down and remand it. And let give a full hearing with respect to this in terms of the transfer, but again, in terms of the sentence, so we can determine that it's a sentence that's in the best interest, not just the child, but the best interest of the administrative justice and the best interest of the public.
When you say a full hearing, I want to be sure I understand what you mean. Are you claiming that the hearing on the motion to transfer was somehow incomplete.
Judge, and again, I can't distinguish. I've got to be honest with you. I'm just telling you I would have done it differently, and I'm stuck with the record I've got. But the judge could certainly take into consider those things that he should have taken into consider and should hear us out with respect to the sentence so it can be 50 to 60 rather than 35 to 60. I think I'm out of time, so thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Marfisi, good morning to you.
May it please the Court, I'm Sarah Marfisi, Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Nebraska. Hunt assigned two errors on appeal. First, he argues that the district court erred in retaining jurisdiction, and second, that it erred in sentencing him as an adult. Both of these issues are left to the discretion of the trial court, and there was no error in the trial court's discretion here. Beginning with the transfer issue, as this court held in State v. Goodwin, there's no abuse of discretion by the trial court when its basis for retaining jurisdiction is supported by appropriate evidence. In weighing all of the juvenile transfer factors here, the district court ultimately found that Hunt was a danger to the community. The facts of this case and Hunt's criminal history support this conclusion. Hunt was already on juvenile probation when he cut his electronic ankle bracelet and committed the series of crimes here, which included a shooting. When Hunt committed these crimes, he was already receiving numerous juvenile services. These included family support, gang intervention, family therapy, GPS tracking, a specialist to work with, and an IEP for school. The juvenile court has worked extensively with Hunt, yet he still committed these violent crimes while under supervision. On these facts, the district court's concern about public safety and the district court's belief that Hunt should continue in secure detention are sufficient for it to retain jurisdiction.
Did the young man in this case actually go back to the same gas station?
Yes, Your Honor. The second robbery, the completed robbery, was the same gas station that Hunt had previously robbed in one of the crimes that landed him on juvenile probation.
Is that significant?
It's significant in that it shows a lack of remorse that when he went to commit another robbery, he went back to the same things that he had done before, that he understood how to commit robberies and was willing to do so again despite the juvenile services that he'd been offered. Moving to the sentencing issue, whether to sentence Hunt under the juvenile code was also a matter for the district court's discretion. The violence and danger involved in this crime, as well as Hunt's criminal history, support the district court's decision to sentence him as an adult. Additionally, contrary to the assertion in Hunt's brief, there was no evidence at sentencing that a juvenile group home facility was presently available to house Hunt if the district court had decided to sentence him as a juvenile. At the sentencing hearing, which appears on page 76 of the Bill of Exceptions, defense counsel states that at one point in time, Hunt was able to go to the juvenile secure facility in Arizona. However, even if the district court wished to sentence Hunt to the juvenile code, there was no assertion that there was presently available a secure juvenile facility to send him to.
Did the pre-sentence investigation report contain any information at all about the current availability of the Arizona facility?
It did not. And in the Bill of Exceptions, at one of the hearings prior to sentencing, counsel had said that they had made another request to find out whether the Arizona facility was available. However, and that they were waiting on information, and at sentencing, all they said was that at one point it had been available. So there's no update affirming that it was available to the district court.
If the district court sentences using probation standards, does that go beyond age 19?
Yes, they go significantly beyond age 19, and that was part of the district court's reason both to retain jurisdiction and sentence him as an adult, because he believes that these crimes could not be addressed in the 3 years remaining in Hunt's minority. So contrary to Hunt's assertion, the district court carefully considered all of the juvenile transfer factors at issue in this case and did not abuse its discretion either in its decision to retain jurisdiction or in its decision to sentence Hunt in as an adult and impose the sentences that it imposed. For these reasons, the state asks this court to affirm the judgment and sentence of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. Mr. Davis, were you appointed in this matter? Okay. We thank you for your service anyway. With that, the court is adjourned and you are excused.